Welcome to season 3 of Conversations with Coaches. This is a stakeholder-centered coaching production where we believe everyone deserves a stakeholder-centered leader. I'm Brandon Murgard, your host for the show. This season, we go deep into the case study library to discuss the real-life challenges of leaders and the coaches who help them succeed. As an added bonus, we're giving away the latest installment of our case study library, which includes case study summaries, show notes from each episode, and ways you can connect with the guest. Get your copy today at mgscc.net/case-studies. In today's episode, we're excited to introduce Elise Foster, a dynamic coach who specializes in transforming emerging leaders into strategic thinkers and empowering figures within the tech industry. Elise will share her journey with a tech leader, diving into the challenges, strategies, and successes of fostering leadership growth. Join us as we explore how Elise's coaching approach has led to remarkable growth, empowering leaders to drive innovation and team success. Come on in, and let's find out more about the client.
So the client was a superstar in the med tech industry, able to deliver on the technical challenges, someone who worked their way up through the organization and really had a lot of knowledge. The organization respected their intellect, their capability, and people had trouble working with this leader. We've all probably known that leader for whom they're really technically gifted. We struggle to engage with them in meetings. This was that leader. They would cut people off. They wouldn't listen to other solutions, and they would really push forward for their solution without hearing other options. And people might just summarize it by this person was an arrogant SOB and not somebody they really wanted to work with. And so the company approached me to work with this leader to help them find a way to keep him in the organization. And not just keep him in the organization, but find opportunities for him to grow in the organization.
This sounds like the epitome of what we think of as a great client, someone who has all the capabilities, who has the trust, but boy, if they just fixed that one behavior, that would turn things around. So the organization is the one who's calling you in. How did they find out about you as a coach?
So this is an organization that I've had a 10 plus year relationship with. And in fact, my first client there was my very first Marshall Goldsmith stakeholder-centered coaching client. And they were in a different position in the organization when they started and now at the CEO level. And I had built trust with this leader. So every time there was an opportunity for someone like this leader to be coached, someone they really had a lot of respect for that they wanted to keep in the organization, I was fortunate that the CEO continued to call me to bring in coaching to support their leader's growth.
Is it safe to say that given your past experience, you didn't really need to pitch the process? They kind of knew what it was, and it was sort of like, hey, bring this in, just get the tool moving.
Yeah, in this case, it was very much they knew the process and we just went ahead and got started. When we first went at it, I had to pitch the process a bit. And, you know, truth be told, I'm not really sure why they trusted me so much to begin with. I have a feeling just the recognition that that coaching is more than just the individual being coached. It's really about how they are with others. They recognize the value in that. And so we're willing to give it a try the first time and found some great results. And so we're willing to continue with that as a method going forward.
Awesome. And how about with this particular leader? Was this a situation where it was like, you have no choice, you're getting a coach? Or was this something that they had, you know, raised their hand for? What was that dynamic like?
Yeah, I would most definitely not consider this the client who raised their hand and self-identified. This was a client who was very reluctant to come into coaching, in fact. And because of that, in this particular case, we actually set the engagement up in a couple of parts. We first did a 360 and did a few initial coaching sessions before we even got to stakeholder-centered coaching to see how much self-awareness, how much willingness did this client have to move forward? And the 360 results were really illuminating for this leader. And they started to see how they were getting in their own way. And they wanted to find ways to be different with their colleagues.
Wonderful. I mean, I've through these interviews, something interesting I've learned is that quite a few coaches are doing the 360 before getting into stakeholder center coaching, which I think that's, you know, the beauty of the modularity of it. These initial sessions, you're really working to assess coachability and their readiness. What kind of, you know, what kind of questions or what kind of, let's say, indicators are you looking for to judge whether they're really ready for this?
I wish I had a list of questions ready, and in some respects, it's a little bit of a feeling, which is probably an unsatisfactory answer for people listening. I think if I step back though and think about it, it is the preparedness that they come to a coaching session with, and their willingness. And one of the big things that I look for is their willingness to not just put the answer down on paper, but be willing to dive a little bit more deeply in the conversation and not just answer the coaching question, but really be willing to go, okay, well, what does this mean for me? And obviously, they need to show up. And this was a leader who was diligent about showing up. And I think by the end of our first few sessions, you could see a softening where they weren't so kind of rigid and upright and like, okay, what's in this for me? And they were starting to see some value in speaking out loud some of the conversations a lot of leaders already have going on in their heads, but they just haven't had anyone there to tease them out.
Okay, so your proxy measures are largely, do they show up? Are they prepared? And are they having deep, genuine conversations beyond just kind of answering standard? You know, what do you want to get out of this? Really diving deep into that process, correct?
Yeah, and I would double down on the last one because people can show up and they can do the assignment. But if they don't go deep, that's where it indicates to me that they would rather check the box and show that they went through the process, and the likelihood of them really getting any kind of monumental improvement or even subtle improvement is much more limited in most cases.
That is outstanding advice for anyone who's a stakeholder-centered coach, and likely if you're coaching in other processes as well, to really make sure a client is ready before jumping into it. I remember Chris Coffey would send, you know, here's the process, here's the 20 most improved behaviors, et cetera. And that was his proxy measure. When I show up, did you read these? Did you think about it? Do you know what you're looking to work on? And if you didn't, you're probably not going to be ready for this. I think that's wonderful how you've done it. And did the leader themselves, were they able to, or I should say, did they verbalize, hey, I'm starting to change through these sessions, I'm becoming more receptive and open to this? Or was it just a linear progression for them?
I can't pinpoint exactly where in the course of our time working together they identified that they were changing. And this is somebody that I continue to work with, and each time they are acknowledging and naming things that are different for them, and really actually quite surprised when they look back at where they started as someone who was maybe a bit harder and direct and to the point. And we don't talk about emotion or feeling or like, you know, how relaxed I was in a difficult conversation to working now where they're surprising themselves and going, huh, I had no idea giving difficult feedback could feel that good. And not because I, you know, let loose on somebody, but because it felt like a partnership.
Wow, that's a big, big realization to come to at a handful of sessions. So tell us a little bit about how they, you know, this may be a redundant question, Elise. What came out in the 360?
So the kinds of things that came out in the 360 is that this leader is almost always the first to speak. They don't let others get into the conversation. When people come in with a different perspective or wanting to go in a different direction, there tends to be resistance to even wanting to explore that. And just general affect. The person was rough around the edges, just hard to engage with, not particularly personable. It was all business. And nothing beyond that.
And how about their growth area as a result of this? How did they articulate based on this feedback?
What they started to focus on is really shifting the dynamic and saying, instead of being the one that comes in with the answers, I want to approach this where I'm seeking out perspectives before we get to the solution. I'm engaging all of the people who have insights and possibilities for the direction we want to go. I want to seek those out first so we can create a better, stronger collective decision. And I want to do it in a way that they have trust, that I'm not kind of faux asking for input, and I'm just going to go off and do my own thing.
Beautiful. This, I mean, it already sounds transformative just by the end of the 360. That's very impressive. You know, when I think about this type of leader, there's scores of them in the world. By your guess, from your experience, how many of those leaders that have this type of situation are completely oblivious to the fact that they should seek other perspectives before reaching the solution? And the other kind of big aha moments is, how many of those leaders have no idea and just learn about it from a 360 versus those who know what they need to do and probably just don't do it?
That's a great question. I haven't thought about like how many leaders have any visibility that they are, leading the charge without recognizing they have a whole, group at their disposal to go on the mission with them. And it's a bit of an unfair question in some part because I tend to work with leaders who are the ones that raise their hand first. This leader didn't happen to be one of those leaders. So I'm going to have an unsatisfying answer that I couldn't even venture a guess on how many leaders are just surprised by their 360. I'd say, all told in my almost 20 years of coaching, I probably have had maybe less than 5% who are just flat out surprised by the results and going, oh, I had no idea I did that. What I think is more true is that they know they can be that way. They're surprised by how big an impact their being that way is having on others. They don't quite see the gravity of being that way. They just think it's a thing that people work around. And don't see the negative impact of it.
Absolutely amazing. It's wild just how much we learn by asking, how much better we can be just by asking and following up. Good. So this leader's picked something to work on. It's born out of this 360. What was your process in helping this leader get through to the finish line? Can you give us an overview of how you structured the engagement?
Yeah, so we did a couple of things. The first was obviously thinking about in the context of this improvement goal of seeking out other perspectives before sharing my own. We had to think about who are the real stakeholders who would be most likely to see that so that the people that this leader was engaging with to get feed forward and check in on how they did in the previous month actually had some at-bats, so to speak, so they could give really useful input. So that was first and foremost. We spent quite a bit of time identifying who are those leaders. And some of them, the stakeholders, were people who completed the 360 and some were not. Then we asked for an initial round of feed forward, and then working with the client, identified out of that list, what's the thing that this leader feels most excited about working on? So not because it's going to be easy, but because it gives them the most energy. Often when we get feed forward ideas from others, some of them really land and they go, oh, I know, I've always wanted to do that. And others are like, I don't think so. And so we really tried to narrow in on what are the ones that they have the most energy and excitement to go after, and identified a few. And some of the very first ones were things like, I am going to, in meetings, seek other opinions first. So what that means I'm not going to be doing is offering my solution first. And we designed some intentional experiments. Which are the meetings this feels safe enough to try it in, where there doesn't feel like there's a big risk? Because at the end of the day, the leader's working on big, important projects, things that matter to the organization. And we try to start somewhat small And not meetings that are inconsequential, but meetings where if it went badly, we could live to tell the tale about it. And so it was a series of continuing to do that. So each month getting some feed forward, then coming back, identifying the most important, the number one or two things that he wanted to work on, and then designing very specific experiments by kind of looking forward at the calendar. And then the other piece that I bring in is really getting the leader to take a step back, because I was saying earlier that many leaders have an idea of what they need to change, and they maybe even have already tried to change it. But there's something deep in them. There's some mindsets. There are stories they are telling themselves about why they need to be the way they are that interrupt their ability to enact this new behavior. So in combination with going out and trying the thing, we had a lot of conversation around, okay, what was it like? What felt risky when you invited other opinions and there was a long pause in the meeting? What felt risky to you about that? And so continued this series each month and continued to up the ante, so to speak, on the actions, and sometimes doubled back to actions that slipped over time.
Do you find your role in that type of conversation is, you know, just to be a sounding board, help them process the information, ask the right questions and process it? Or are you injecting a lot of your own expertise and taking kind of a consultative role through it?
I would like to say I am 99% asking questions and helping them process. And I bet the percentage is a little bit less than that because, you know, some of those underlying mindsets that we all hold, like, you know, I have expertise, I want to share it. I do my very best to, especially when somebody's gone and run an experiment, to focus on the processing of it. And then sometimes when we're thinking about what's the next experiment, that might be where some of the expertise comes in small doses. So first engaging with the client to think about, okay, what's the next experiment you might run? And as they identify pieces of that, I might bring in, oh, it sounds like you're trying to do this. How helpful would it be to have an example of some of the kinds of things best-in-class leaders do?
So experiments, tell me more about other types of experiments. I think that is such a great way to lead leaders to where they want to be. Were there other notable experiments you guys trial?
In addition to just, you know, asking for people to share their input first, that's a pretty simple question. You know, hey, what does everybody else think? We're trying to solve this challenge. The other kind of experiment we started to work on is crafting different kinds of questions. So a lot of leaders, and actually the vast majority of leaders I know, are really gifted at the closed-ended yes-no question. Should we go in this direction? Do you think we ought to consider? And leaders are less skilled at asking the much more open questions, the what-ifs, the how-might-ways, and just really broadening and enlarging the perspective. So we have a bigger picture and more complete data sets. The data set will never be complete, but having more complete data to be able to choose a direction. And so there were some real, some experiments really about designing the questions and how do I get myself out of the mode of yes, no questions and into the mode of open-ended questions. And a lot of that was having to suspend what this really gifted, smart leader already knows about the product, having to set that aside to be able to hear what others had to bring to the table.
What was the stakeholder experience? Like, were they just shocked and floored when this leader started running these experiments? Were they open and receptive to it, skeptical? What would you say?
I would say my experience with the stakeholders is that they were open and receptive, some more so than others. And in fact, we'll get to the results, but there was one particular leader that was a stakeholder that had a conversation afterwards that basically said, I will never give anyone the top of the scale. So don't even expect getting the top of the scale in terms of improvement. So that to me was a signal that they were seeing improvement. but something in them makes it really hard to say you are the very tippy top of the scale.
Well, let's fast forward to the end. What actually happened as a result of your work with this leader?
So the leader is now seen as not just more engaging and personable in meetings, but somebody who seeks out advice and goes out of their way to hear from perspectives that might be important in making the decisions related to the next product line or how to, you know, deal with an issue in the field. So that's the first thing. They are themselves just much more comfortable in these spaces of not being the first to speak, of not being the one to have the winning answer. Does that mean they never have the winning answer? No. But they're much more comfortable holding back and developing the answer with all of the other brains that are in the room. And they're also not shy when they have expertise or information. They're not shy about bringing in that to the table, but they bring it to the table in a much more relatable way, where it's not one idea against the other idea. And overall, people saw dramatic shifts in this person's leadership, you know, to the tune of, you know, on our, I really appreciate the scale, the -3 to +3 scale. This leader improved almost to a 1.7, which tells me that people saw a significant difference in how they were interacting and engaging. And somebody who was, you know, technically gifted, but no one wanted to work with, is now somebody who people actually enjoy working with.
Well, there's a pretty particular trend we see with these smartest in the room type of leaders on their mini survey. So their stakeholders are rating them approximately a 1.7 on that -3 to +3. How did they rate themselves?
Remember, there are the two questions, the overall leadership and then the specific improvement behavior. And in the case of overall leadership, and I think this really speaks to how this leader was feeling their own comfort being very different, which is hard to do. This leader rated themselves at a 2. But on the very specific initiative, the leader actually rated themselves at a 1, with everybody else rating them on average about a 1.5. And so it showed me a degree of humility in this leader. And I think the quote-unquote overrating on the overall was really more to do with this leader's comfort doing things that felt so foreign at the time we started.
Good. And ladies and gentlemen, those of you listening at home, when your morning commute, maybe at the gym, we're talking about the mini survey, which is -3 to +3. And the question is about changes. What changes have you seen? So a +1.67 is, we have seen you improve from your baseline in this time period quite significantly. And what we do tend to see is the smartest in the room type of people tend to score themselves below on the final score. From their stakeholders, as they start to see, wow, there's actually a lot that I can be doing and want to continue changing. This is excellent results from the stakeholders as well as from the leader. Since you were there and a relatively external set of eyes, what were you noticing was changing?
The things that I probably noticed the most were even just fundamentally in our coaching conversations, the kinds of questions the leader was coming in with. And their ability to be reflective about themselves as a leader is probably number one. So the second thing I think I really noticed was different with this leader was early on in coaching, the leader, when there was a difficult situation, would more come in fuming mad to a coaching session, you know, almost pounding their fist, upset about something that happened. And later coaching sessions, with the addition of that self-reflection, recognizing their part in what caused that thing to go awry, and a greater humility that allowed them to process it differently. It is so much easier to process and to think about how can I be different as a leader when I'm more clear-headed about it. When I'm fuming mad about something, it's probably not my best time to process and try to think through, okay, how could I be different here?
And I presume that he's taking these, well, given the stakeholder responses, it seems like he's taking this into the meetings that he's having, into the interactions with others. And you also talked kind of earlier on about the mindsets. What shifts were you seeing in the way that the leader was viewing their own performance?
So this is a leader who worked his way up in the organization, started, you know, very much at the lowest levels of the organization, and actually didn't go to university until after already having worked at this company. I'm painting that picture because often we carry a story with us. If we aren't like the others, we have to prove ourselves in a way. And one of the ways we can prove ourselves is by making sure our ideas move forward. And so probably one of the biggest mindset shifts for this leader was recognizing that it wasn't about his ideas. That wasn't the way to show his value to the organization. The bigger value was to bring out the ideas of all of the people involved so that you can get to better solutions. And more than that, so that people feel like they can see their fingerprints in the solutions, and then they're more engaged in terms of ultimately implementing. So that was probably the biggest mindset shift that I saw in this leader. There were, of course, others, but that was the number one that comes to mind.
How about you, Elise? You've gone through this journey of coaching this leader quite successfully. What did you take away? What were your key learnings from this engagement?
I learn a lot from every client, especially the ones who are more like me. And it gives me great opportunities to recognize and remind myself where I'm the one that's pushing my idea forward for whatever reason. And where instead of coming in with, this is the way we ought to go, or here's the problem we need to fix, through this client seeing the great opportunity to pause and go, wait a second. How do we make sure we're clear and aligned on what the thing is that needs to get fixed? And then two things happen. One, I share the input that's actually relevant to the thing that needs to get fixed. And I'm not disappointed when they don't take my idea. So it was just a really great reminder to be aligned in what we're up to together before just thinking, I kind of know the direction we need to go.
How do you feel that your assessment of the leader's commitment, how do you feel that that contributed to the leader's success? Just making sure that we're not putting rubber on the road from day one. We're actually just going to ease our way into this to see, test the waters and see how they react. How would you say that that affected the outcomes?
I think the commitment was probably the singular thing that made a difference for this leader. It's easy to ask people for insights. How can I get better? But if you're not committed to making that change, it's really hard to actually put it into practice. And what's even harder than that is to take a look at yourself and see, how am I getting in my own way? And how are the stories I'm telling myself leading me to these less effective behaviors? And I think this leader, had they shown early on that it was about checking the box, we wouldn't have seen the improvement that we saw, because the leader went really deep and really was willing to peel back the layers to understand, here are these shaping things that happen in my life that keep me committed to doing my less effective behaviors. And I don't want, in this particular scenario, I don't want to be that way anymore. And without their sincere commitment to the process, I think we would have fallen completely flat.
If I'm listening to this interview today and I am a coach who is helping others with similar issues, what advice would you have for me in light of what you've learned from this engagement?
I think the first piece of advice that comes to mind is doing a readiness check, whatever that is for you. If it's a set of questions or it's a mini engagement before the full engagement, I think that's number one. I think number two, more so in the case where leaders don't raise their hand themselves, I think it's really critical that you get feedback either through a 360 or some other process, so they have the opportunity to see another reflection of themselves that they can't see by looking at themselves. I think beyond that, it's really just sticking to the process, making sure they have stakeholders that are invested and committed to having their best interest at heart, and bringing them feed forward that's really going to be helpful, and then working the process step by step. And along the way, the piece that I sprinkle in that I add to the stakeholder-centered process is really getting leaders to explore what feels risky about trying on this new behavior. Like, what's the real, and let me clarify that. I don't mean like what feels risky in the sense that the project's going to fail. That's always a risk out there. Even if you do it well, that's a risk. What I mean is, if you try on this new behavior, what feels risky to you? If you're the second or third to speak, if you stop attending some meetings that you're really not needed for, like, what feels risky to you about fundamentally not being in the room? And so I think if you can start getting leaders to explore that question alongside the feed forward they get, you can get an even more powerful result.
Amazing. Elise Foster, ladies and gentlemen, if our audience today wants to follow you, if they want to get in touch with you, read about your story, read about your insights and coaching, how could people follow you? How could they get in touch?
The two best ways to get in touch are via my website, which is just elisefoster.com, or through LinkedIn. They can find me with a simple LinkedIn search. Those are probably the two best ways to be in touch. Some of the other social media I have been reluctantly, maybe not committing to abandoning, but they'll get abandoned.
Well, if people want to read more about your insights on coaching, on leadership, I know that you've also authored a number of books. Can you tell us very briefly about those?
Yeah, so I have authored two books in the field of education, both centering around curiosity and collective intelligence. The first was, and both were actually sequels to best-selling business books. The first was The Multiplier Effect, which is the education sequel to Multipliers, written by Liz Wiseman. And the second was Beautiful Questions in the Classroom, co-authored with Warren Berger, who is the author of A More Beautiful Question. So all four books are really fantastic. If you're in the education space, I recommend the education books. If you're in the business space, the two business books will really get you thinking about how your curiosity really can be a lever to success.
Elise Foster offered invaluable insights into coaching emerging leaders in the tech industry. Her strategies for enhancing leadership capabilities showcase the importance of strategic thinking and empowerment in driving team success. We hope today's episode has inspired you to review your team leadership and see how you can further spur innovation. Remember, all the case studies of this season are available for download at mgscc.net/case-studies. The link can also be found in the episode description. And if you'd like to better understand the foundations of leveraging stakeholders and measuring results in your coaching, then join the free training program, Foundations of Stakeholder-Centered Coaching, where we share the philosophies and frameworks that guarantee improved leadership effectiveness in 12 months or less. You can register for the free course at mgscc.net/foundations-course. Until next time, this has been another episode of Conversations with Coaches by Stakeholder-Centered Coaching, where we believe everyone deserves a stakeholder-centered leader. Thank you for joining the conversation, and stay tuned for more stories of leadership transformation.